Parshas Re'eh starts with a choice. Re'eh, see, Anochi Nosein Lefnechem Hayom. I have put before you today bracha uklala, the blessing and the curse. Es habracha asher tishmu'u al mitzvos Hashem Elokeichem, the bracha so that you should listen to the words of Hashem Elokeichem and do the mitzvos, and the klala im loy tishmu'u al mitzvos Hashem Elokeichem. If you do not do the words of Hashem, if you do not keep the mitzvahs, then there is the klala. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter points out a discrepancy in the language. The bracha is there. I'm giving you the bracha so that you should listen to the mitzvahs. With the klala, we add the word im, if. Because when a person decides that his path is to listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the way is clear before him. The bracha comes to help. With the klala, it's not there, Meiraish. A klala is something that comes if a person doesn't listen. And if we pay attention, we see just how true this is. Hashem gives us the bracha as an advance to the mitzvah. He gives us a house so we could put a mezuzah on it, a child so that we can do bris milah, the money so we can give tzedakah, our limbs and organs so that we can use our physical strength to serve Him. So much goodness we have and we're given, and we need to use it in the right manner. There were three tzaddikim who were sitting Shabbos Parshas Re'eh and were discussing the first two words of this parsha. Now again, pshat-wise, it's clear. Re'eh anochi nosein lefnechem. See, I am putting before you today. But they were trying to find a deeper meaning in these two words of Re'eh anochi. The first one said, a person always has to see. Has to see what? Has to see the word anochi. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. See Hashem, who said, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, and Aseres HaDibra, see Him before you always. Shivisi Hashem LeNegdi Samid. Put HaKadosh Baruch Hu before you in front of your eyes, and you will be living a world of Yiras Shamayim, of Yiras Hashem, and you will not sin because the word Anochi Hashem is before you always. That's what Re'eh Anochi means. Re'eh, see what? Anochi. The second one said, no. Re'eh, who's speaking here? This is Moshe Rabbeinu speaking, and what he's telling us is, Re'eh Anochi, see me. Who am I? I am your leader. And in order to always find the right path, you have to see your leader. You have to have a Rav, you have to have a Moreh Derech, you have to have a person that you can ask and that you could see his image in front of you. And if you see the image of your Rebbe in front of you, you will not sin. The third one added, Re'eh Anochi. A person always has to see who? Anochi, me. A person, we're very good at looking around us and seeing what's wrong around us and criticizing the people around us. And a person has to see who? See Anochi, see himself, and realize and recognize the Bechira is in my hands. These are my decisions, and I have to make these decisions. The choice is always in my hands. Re'eh Anochi, see yourself, see me. And understand that we have to make the right choices. Chazal give us a very well-known mashal to explain the choice that we have to make. They say that there was a person who was on his way to a destination and he came to a crossroads. He sees the two roads in front of him. One of them have thorns and the other one seemed smooth. There was a person who sat there at the crossroads and said to him, you're looking at the smooth road and thinking that's the better way to go. I'm telling you that the thorny path, yes, it starts off thorny and difficult, but by the time you get to the end of the path, it's a much better choice for you. The straight path starts off straight, but there are many obstacles along the way. Choose to go on the path that looks more complicated because that's the better way for you ultimately. A well-known mashal, but the question we have to ask is, why do I need this mashal? Do I not understand that when I'm making the choice, I have to look for the long-term goal, and I have to look and see which is the better way to get me to where I actually want to go and not to get distracted by the beginning? And I think the answer is that it's hard to see sometimes. Although the Torah says, Re'eh, look and choose the right path, that path is often obscured. What looks good and proper can sometimes lead us down the wrong path. We see Befrayach Rasha'im Kamay Esev, and we see Derech Rasha'im Tzlecha, the way the path of Rasha'im has a lot of Hatzlacha. They are blossoming and blooming. And sometimes we need someone or something to point out the long-term perspective to us. What is the ultimate better path? Because life is complicated. There aren't two roads, but 2 million roads. Meaning every path we take leads us to more and more and more roads. And sometimes at a crossroads, there are 3 or 4 or 5 paths, and the straight ones can look crooked, and unfortunately, the crooked ones can look straight. And we live in an upside-down world where it is really difficult to make the right choices. In Pirkei Avos, we're given some guidelines, some direction. Rabbi Omer, Ezahi derech yishara sheyavar layah adam, what is the direct path that a person should choose to go on? And he starts off talking about rishus, meaning this is not clear-cut halacha, which is the right way for me to go, but it's a rishus. It's a which job should I choose? Which city should I live in? Which school should I send my children to? All different kinds of simple choices or more complicated choices that I make, that there isn't a clear-cut halachic decision to make here. It's more of a derech rishus. It's something that's given in my hands, and it's unclear what the right thing I'm supposed to be doing right now is. And Rebbe answers his question by saying, Kol shehi teferes la'iseha v'teferes la'min ha'adam. Teferes means harmony. And says that when you're choosing a path that's rishus, try and find something that feels harmonious for yourself, for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for the people around you. He's referencing the Rambam's golden path, the middle path. Choose something that is not too extreme on either end, and you'll find that you're choosing the right path for you to go on. But then he continues and says, when we're not talking about rishus, when we're talking about something that's a chiyuv, ve'zahir b'mitzvah kala k'vachamura, be as zahir. Now zahir relates to the word zrizus. Have enthusiasm, have passion, have zrizus for every mitzvah, whether it be kala or chamura, because she'ena tayodeh matzan tzchar en shel mitzvahs, you do not know the reward for a mitzvah. It is impossible to be able to define or to describe how much reward a person gets for a mitzvah. He's referring to a mitzvah saseh. With a mitzvah lay saseh, we have a little bit of an idea of how much the value of a kala and a chamura based on the punishment you get if you do the avera. And there's a certain punishment, we can extrapolate from that punishment how much reward. But for a mitzvah saseh, there is no punishment for not doing that mitzvah saseh, usually given to us in the Torah, and therefore, how am I meant to know how much schar I get for a mitzvah? On a deeper level, the reason we cannot define the schar for a mitzvah is because schar for a mitzvah is really given in a different currency. Meaning, for an example, if I would want to buy a car, and I ask somebody how much does the car cost, and they say it's $25,000, and I say, look, I don't have real money, I have monopoly money. Now, I understand monopoly money is less than real money, so instead of giving you $25,000, I want to give you $250,000. They'll say, no, it doesn't matter how much monopoly money you give. You can't buy a car with monopoly money. Monopoly money is for a game, and a car you have to pay with real money. And you say, okay, how about if I give you $2 billion of monopoly money? They'll still say monopoly money doesn't buy a car. No matter how much money you give, you can't buy a car with monopoly money. And so too, you can't pay for a mitzvah in the currency that we use in this world. Schar mitzvah b'hai al malaika. In this world, there is no schar for a mitzvah because it's simply too much. To get an idea, going back to Pirkei Avos, it says that every yafe sha'a achas shal kairas ruach ba'ilam haba, a breath of satisfaction, just one breath of satisfaction in Olam Haba is worth more than kol chayei ha'olam hazeh, all of the pleasures in this world. And when it says all the pleasures in this world, it means all the pleasures in this world put together, meaning every bit of simcha, every bit of nachas, every bit of physical joy and pleasure, every moment of vacation, every piece of good food that we've eaten, any pleasure in this world, and we put it all together, is not going to be worth one breath of satisfaction in Olam Haba. It gives us a bit of an understanding of we cannot judge how much schar there is for every single mitzvah that we do. As an example, the children of light, when they came out from the destruction of Sodom, they made a mistake. Their mistake was they thought they were the only two women left in the world. And they assumed, therefore, that in order to ensure the continuation of the world, they're going to have to do an action that will ensure the continuation of mankind. The older daughter went first. And therefore, as a schar, her descendant, Rus, who comes from Moav, gets to join Klal Yisrael four generations earlier than her sister's descendant. Her sister's descendant is Naama, who comes from the nation of Ammon. She's going to marry Shlomo HaMelech four generations after Rus marries Boaz. Why does Rus get to go first? Because she went first. Because she went first to create the continuation of mankind, to have this child, Moav, her child, her descendant, gets to join Klal Yisrael first. What's the difference who joins first? Well, we know that a child brings schar to the parents even after the parent is no longer in the world, which means that Rus, as the matriarch of the family, not only gets her schar, she also gets the schar of, for example, Yishai, who's one of the four people who died without chait. She gets the schar of Kilav, the son of David HaMelech, who is another one of those four people. She gets the schar of David HaMelech himself, David Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayim. She gets the schar of Shlomo HaMelech, who's the one who built the Beis HaMikdash, and all the schar that Naama loses out on is because of the zrizus that she had doing this mitzvah. Now, if we stop for a minute, we recognize and realize, of course, this wasn't a mitzvah. This was a mistake. She shouldn't have done it. But there was a tiny little bit of mesiras nefesh or of l'shem shamayim in the action that she did and the mistake that she made. And for that tiny little bit of l'shem shamayim, she gets all the schar of Yishai, of Kilav, of David, of Shlomo HaMelech, then we can imagine how much schar we get for doing a mitzvah with our full heart. When we stop to think about schar of mitzvah, it's literally mind-boggling, and we cannot possibly be able to interpret it properly. There's a story told of the Chofetz Chaim who was in a wagon with his son-in-law on the way back from doing some community work. And when they got to the station, he wanted to pay the wagon driver. His son-in-law, Rav Tzvi Levinson, said, "Don't worry, I already paid. You don't have to pay." And the Chofetz Chaim said, "What? When did you pay him? Why? Why did you pay him already? There's a mitzvah asay that says, B'yomai titein tzcharei. We have to pay a person on the day that he does the job. But you only get the schar for doing that mitzvah if you pay him once the job is done. If you prepay him, you don't get the schar for doing that mitzvah." And here we had an opportunity to get schar for doing a mitzvah. We could have listened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and done the mitzvah, and we lost the opportunity to do that mitzvah because you paid him beforehand. There are mitzvahs around us all day, and all we have to do is stop and pick them up. There are people who live like this, who are looking for opportunities to do mitzvahs and to pick them up. We have to look at our choices and make decisions. What is the cost of doing this mitzvah? What is the hefset of not doing this mitzvah? What is the schar for doing a mitzvah? And look for opportunities to choose the paths that, yes, may look more thorny at the beginning, but bring us tremendous reward at the end. And again, these choices are complicated. And sometimes I have to balance, and sometimes I don't know my priorities, and sometimes I simply can't see. So I'm going to go back to those three tzaddikim at the beginning of this Dvar Torah, who were sitting around and discussing what the two words re'eh mean, and see how these three explanations can really give us the direction of how to make the choice when I'm not sure what the choice means. The first one, Re'eh Anoichi, see Anoichi Hashem Alekecha, see HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and say, what does the Torah say? Is there a clear halacha here? What is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from me right now? What is the right way for me to go? And if it's not clear in the Torah, then the second Re'eh Anoichi, find a gadol, find a rav, find a morei derech, find a teacher, find a mentor, and ask for help. And finally, Re'eh Anoichi, look deep into me, into myself. Every person, we have that Mabata Emes. We have that truth. We have that voice that tells us, this is where you belong. This is what you should be doing. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants for me. This is where I should be going. And if I have all these three in place, if I can look into the Torah and to Halacha, what is it that is the right thing to do? And if it's not clear to me, find somebody to ask. And lastly, take a deep, good, long, hard look at yourself and say, this is the path I'm supposed to go on. And yes, it might be difficult, and there might be costs associated, and there might be thorns. This is the way that I want to go.